John, I have set records today. And the last time we were down at the 182 Hall, we had made a statement to one of my friends that I treated you rather badly when you first came to Lamb. You didn't say it that way, but you said that I christened you or something of that nature, but you were certainly insinuating that I was probably not very friendly. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that I treat all educators that way, not just John with that. And that if he'd come from the press, it'd been even worse.
You gave me last week a wonderful box with the photos and lots of stuff that I didn't bring. And I think we could find my partner in the project about the JWASL. I wanted to go through those and want to give you comments. I thought maybe you could do a little more advanced on it.
That I had been abused by the local steward in the department I was working for. Felt very strongly about that. Being a low seniority person, thought that he was kind of discriminating against me a little bit, trying to get me around and take my job away from me. And so I decided to run against him in 1967. I think that's the motivating factor for anybody to run, to be satisfied with what's going on, and so they go after a position and try to make a change. And that's the only thing that can happen. You don't make change, that's what you have to do, and that's the thing that you have to, be in a position. I was kind of an activist. I would rebel against what I thought was the only way to do it. My parents they worked two jobs. My mother didn't work. I didn't get it from that. I just resented people in authority taking advantage of their authority. Mistreating people. Using their authority to intimidate people. I always disliked that. So when I got worked in the plant, which was the first industrial job I ever had, didn't think I could do that. So I always worked outside, got more than anything else. And the steward, the person who was supposed to be on our side, he was making decisions about what I was going to put up with. Well, actually, I didn't do it because I disliked management. And I think I'd always treated me well, and as a steward, they respected me and treated me well. We were in the early days. Back when management couldn't make decisions in that way. And I learned that credibility was the most important thing. That credible with management, and they would respect that. And we got to the point where management would come to me and say, is it all right if we do this?
When you were prepping?
No, when I was doing.
When you were doing.
And,
so you're saying in the late 60s?
Yep. It's 65 to 70.
Stewards in general or just Bill Brayman here?
Well,
that kind of influence.
In that case, I had management from other divisions come and ask me how they would, how would I handle a situation. Not even working with me, so my reputation kind of went across the whole plant. But I also had workers that would come in from other divisions, and that's what prompted me to run for president. I was the chairman of the Stewards Council, which was about 60 chief stewards in the motor wheel plant.
How many employees were we talking about at that point?
Probably 3,500
okay.
members all together in the plant. So I had a good base, had strong support from the Stewards Council, which is the nucleus to launch a political campaign. And let me tell you that running for office in a large local union is very similar to running for a legislative position or some position in the public sector.
Why do you say that?
Well, you have to campaign. You have to go around and talk to people and let them know what you want to do and get known by people so as they have confidence in you.
Do you have a slogan or a theme of your campaign? Or?
No, I didn't do that, but I had a committee, a political committee, and the UAW started the political committees, but I had virtually every steward in the plant support. I was running against a 16-year incumbent, and
was it
close election?
No, it wasn't close at all. It wasn't close at all. I don't recall, but I won by 65-70%.
Sometimes people say that some people retire in office. Had this person sort of done that, that they sort of stopped doing the job, or they were out of touch, or a different generation?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think, he had served his purpose, had done his job, and was kind of resting on his past deeds and not doing anything for the future.
Now we're talking about the presidency.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned UAW. I don't know if you want to talk about it now, stay on the plant life, or at some point I'd like to hear how you had some interactions with UAW locals in Lansing and elsewhere, and obviously other AIW locals when you get to the point where you're regional director. At some point I'd like to hear how you, if there's any differences, if you compared or contrasted AIW, UAW-AFL, and UAW-CIO, or just UAW, in terms of what the locals were like. I mean, you mentioned something that it was kind of like a UAW local. Is that in general?
Well, I mentioned the UAW because they had caucuses in their elections in the big GM plants here in town. They had various caucuses that they would run on, caucus being similar to a party, mm-hmm. Republican or Democrat. When I ran, I had what I was referring to is that I had a committee that worked each division and each department for me, because covering 3,500 people and getting to know 3,500 people, and I made it a point to get around and talk to every person. It took some time.
But Local 182 during your years of presidency, or right before, during your years of working there, did not have a unity caucus.
No, it did not.
Any of that sort of business.
No, no, it didn't. We didn't get to that sophistication. Didn't have to.
Do you know if it had 182 in its early years?
No. Well, it may have way back because 182. Right up until the very end was an amalgamated local, which was a local that had many different units in it. Back in its beginning days, every union, every organized plant just about in this city was a member of the 182. Including the UAW.
Mm-hmm. Including what became Local 652 and 602.
Yeah, they were all part of 182 at that time. When the vote came down to decide whether they're going to become CIO or not, obviously the GM locals all went CIO, and some of the others didn't. Motor Wheel was one of them. Dyer Steel, Dale Steel, Centrifuging. There were several other units that stayed AFL.
Although it precedes your time, were you ever told by any of the older 182 leadership any kind of stories in answering the question, why did Motor Wheel and why did 182 go with the AFL instead of go with the CIO?
Well, the only story that I have ever had relayed to me was by Walter Campbell. I believe it was Walter Campbell. It could have been Bob Brenner, but one of the two told me that when the vote came down that we lost the GM plants by a very small margin. I mean, it was very close to the GM plants becoming UAW-AFL rather than CIO. That's the only story that I recall from any of the older folks that have been around and that I've talked with.
Did you know Les Washburn at all?
I met Les Washburn 3 or 4 times prior to his death. Of course, I believe he lived in Wisconsin or out in that area somewheres, and he came to Michigan, I believe, one time and visited us at a regional council, and then I met him at a couple conventions, but Les was kind of, when I started out, he wasn't around very often anymore. I don't know why, other than, I guess I do know why he left under sad circumstances as far as he's concerned, I guess. He had to take the hit.
Corruption charges, that business?
The what?
For the corruption charges?
I think he had to take the hit for that, if I recall correctly.
Because some of that happened during his presidency.
Yeah. And he left for the betterment of the union, is what I understand.
Anyways, that's sort of secondhand, but I was just curious what the old-timers had told you. Who was regional director at the point when you became president?
Walter Campbell.
Okay. And could you tell me anything about the relationship looking at from the local union presidency to the regional director? Or if you want to do both, then what it's like being the regional director in the relationship.
Well,
you did both.
When I was first elected president, I met Walter. Walter and I got along very well. He wasn't regional director very long. I mean, he had a heart operation, and he then was elected secretary treasurer of the FL-CIO. And I believe that was in 71, I believe he was elected, 71 or 72, for the FL-CIO secretary treasurer's position. And Bob Renner became director. And in the Bob Brenner was director in 71 when we had our 71 strike. And the representative that we had at the time, in my view and many of the members' views, had done some backdoor negotiations with the company. And it came out that Bob Brenner was also involved. Now, due to our lack of understanding of how negotiations work, whatever, that was most distasteful, and so Bob Brenner and I got off to a very bad start. But Bob took the hit for the representative, took the blame, and we just did not get along very well.
Your and his relationship was strained because of this issue.
Because of the situation where he and the representative had met with company representatives without the bargaining committee present.
Were the reps elected or chosen?
They were chosen by the regional director.
Okay.
Pretty
much out of the ranks, that is out of other...
Yeah, the rep was out of Motor Wheel. He was a Motor Wheel employee and was hired by Walt Campbell. And then Bob...
Previous chief steward or bargaining committee member?
He was a bargaining committee member. And, but as time went on, Bob and I had our fights, but I got to know Bob. He was a very honest, down-to-earth person. We totally misread him. And I really feel bad about that. But nevertheless, that was the history. And we started to get along, and Bob ran for secretary treasurer of the international, and local 182 took the lead in getting him elected, trying to get him elected. We lost by a slim margin, but we did everything we could to get him elected. Now, some people did it because they wanted him out of the director's position, and some did it because they thought that he'd do a good job. No matter what, we did take the lead in trying to get him elected.
Was 182 one of the largest? How could you give a sense of the region?
182 was the largest local union in the region.
Okay. Okay, and this is Region 7?
Region 7, the western half of Michigan. You take US 27 and it runs north and south and split it. On the west side was Region 7, on the east side was Region 6.
So 182 is the largest in the region?
Yes. There were some other large unions, but 3500 was the largest.
Why you mentioned it, what were the other large ones?
Clark Equipment. We had two plants under Clark Equipment. One had about 2,500 members, and the other one had about 2,000. We had Fuller Transmission. That had about 1,800. Kelsey Hayes had about 2,000.
Where, Kelsey and James?
Jackson. Fuller Transmission was in Kalamazoo. The Clark plants were in Battle Creek and Jackson. Then were the large ones. There were several that were just under 1,000.
Is there more you want to say about what it was like being president? Or Stewart?
Well, being Stewart and president, just, you know, this being Stewart, you had a smaller group of people. Being president, you had a larger group of people, and I had to represent everybody, and it was a fun job. I was president during the two major strikes at Motor Wheel, in fact, the only two strikes they had, the 182, and that was trying at best, strenuous, to see what was happening with all of those folks. I'll never forget the 1971 strike. We had just walked out of the plant, and I was walking down the stairs in the union hall, and one of the members come out, this damn union. Hey, what's the matter? Well, this union caused me to get thrown out of my house. Now, this is the first day of the strike. And he was blaming the union because he had nobody else to blame because he wasn't paying his rent. He hadn't paid it before then. But it was a good awakening. Another situation during the 71 strike that really made me sit back and look. We had an older member come up to me and say, you know, Raymond, we hadn't ought to be doing this to this company. They provide us with all of these benefits and holidays and vacations and health care and all of that. We shouldn't be doing this to this company. We should be in there working. And we researched that individual, and he happened to be on the very first bargaining committee that Motor Wheel had. So I went back to him and I said, Roy, do you remember when you were on the bargaining committee? And he said, yeah. I said, do you remember what you had prior to that? Did you have paid vacations? Did you have holidays? Did you have health care and pensions and all of that? He said, no. I said, well then, how could you ask me or tell me that we shouldn't be doing this as a company because you have all of that now? And he looked at me, he says, I'm sorry, and he picked up his picket sign and went out on the picket line. He had forgotten the fight that he had went through to get all of that stuff. But being president was a fun job, but you had to represent everybody, and it's hard to do in 3,500 with 3,500 members to keep 3,500 members happy because somebody is. Dislikes you no matter what. You can't keep everybody happy.
What would you remember some of the big conflicts, the big, maybe it's over bargaining priorities, or maybe it's over, you mentioned the strike, but in addition to that, what, there's the day-to-day, the calling meetings, the meeting with people, but what?
Well, we really had very little friction within the local. If there was any friction, it was just different points of view, how to handle a situation, a grievance. safety, that whatever. And we had the Stewards Council that would debate all of that stuff and try to give some guidance to the membership. But we really had very little internal squabbling. We were deeply involved in politics. I took that on as a personal duty, leading the local and advising them as to who would be the best candidates to elect in the city, the county, and the state elections, as well as the federal government.
You said duty. Why did you say duty?
Well, we weren't all that active in politics before then, and I just took that on as my main agenda item, I guess, to take care of
the politics. Is that something you learned from watching the regional director?
I learned that from Walt Campbell. I learned that from being active in the AFL-CIO. They convinced me that politics was very, very important to the survival of the labor movement.
What point did you get involved in the Lansing Labor Council?
1971.
Oh, right away.
Well, no, I was a delegate. I was a delegate to the Lansing Labor Council in 1968 as a steward. But so I guess I got it. I was just a member of that, and when I got elected local union president, we ran one of our unit chairmen, the founder chairman, for vice president of the council.
Who's that?
His name was John. Well, I can't remember the name. He was the chairman of the center. He was the founder.
Okay.
And we put together that we went out and talked to the state. MSU unions, ASPA unions, gained their support, and I got a call from Gary Thomas, who was president of the council at the time, said that he had heard that I was going to run against him, and I said, no, that's not true at all, Gary. All we want is...
As a firefighter?
Yeah, Gary Thomas, a firefighter, president of Lansing Firefighters at the time. I said, not true, Gary, I'm not running. What we want is vice president's seat. Well, being the largest local in the council, you have to have that. And he said, I'll do everything I can to make sure you plan vice president's jobs. We 182 had the vice president's position. For some reason, the individual that we elected, and I can't think of his name, John.
Didn't serve, didn't stay for long?
Didn't stay long. And Gary Thomas asked me to go on as the first vice president. At the time, we had three vice presidents in the council, and I was the first vice president. And I got active in politics because of the council, through Gary's guidance. We took on the Charlie Chamberlain, I believe was his name, who was a congressman in Lansing in 1971. We ran a young upstart lawyer by the name of Bob Carr against a multi-term congressman in a Republican district that nobody said we could even make a showing, and lost that election, I believe, by 512 votes. I think it was 512 votes. Very slim margin. Charlie Chamberlain won by. And I believe that that was because of Local 182's activities. We got out and worked yard signs and did everything that the Carr campaign wanted, doing the grunt work, so to speak, to get Bob Carr known in the district. It caused Charlie Chamberlain not to run again. Carr became congressman in 74, I believe, 73.
Now, when that kind of effort, did you work closely with the UAW Camp Council?
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about the relationship between the PLC and the Camp Council?
Well, by then, we had the Carr campaign, and Gary Thomas became president of the Michigan Firefighters, and he resigned his position as president of the League. I became the president of the Labor Council, I believe in 72, 73, somewhere in there. And we had a great coalition. We started screening candidates jointly. Now, the UAW was not a member of the AFL. They pulled out in 68, I believe. And they weren't a member, but that was transparent in this community. When you talk labor, you talk AFL and UAW. AFL-CIO Council and the UAW Cap Council, because we were one and the same. We worked together, we screened candidates together. We worked the campaigns together, get off the vote together. We did everything together.
In politics or anything else?
Politics, in particular. Community service and things of that nature, yeah, we worked together on that. But, the leadership of the UAW Cap Council and the Lansing Labor Council worked very, very closely.
Those the elders to your Bob Walton days?
Al Ducci was president of the Labor Council. When I became a delegate, my first meeting to the Lansing Labor Council, I went out to local 652 Union Hall because that's where they held them. And Ducci was there, and I remember this very vividly because me and the other individual went to the council meeting, and Ducci said, "Well, who are you guys?" "Well, we're from Motor Wheel." He said, "Well, this isn't the AFL-CIO Council anymore. This is the Cap Council." So I became active in the Labor Council about the time the UAW pulled out of the AFL-CIO. Whatever that was.
You were at the wrong meeting.
I was at the wrong meeting. But Al let me sit in, and he let us sit in, and we did. I believe Vic Segrist. Became Cap Council president because Ducci went on staff.
And that's probably before Bell.
Yeah. Segrist was president. Then there was somebody. He just got into trouble. He was running away from the Labor Union. Got into trouble. And I'm talking about the Cap Council. There was somebody in there before. It could have been McGuire. I guess it must have been Matt, because I don't know how else I would have gotten to know him so well. And then Steve, then Felsky, then Watson. I got out of it when I went on staff with the worked closely together. When they talked of labor, they spoke of the combination of the city and Lansing. And labor became very strong in politics. We were responsible for electing judges, responsible for electing Merrick Graves. Merrick Graves held local 182. He just was kind of a down-to-earth kind of guy, at least he appeared that way to us. And we supported him early on when he first ran for mayor. I don't know that he ran against Bernie Mann, but he followed Bernie. I don't know that Bernie Mann was dying, but he didn't go for re-election.
Very
I don't recall, but he talked that kind of language, and his wife was more of a politician than he was. We supported Gary, and Gary was very supportive of us. We got along very well. We got Ray Hotchkiss, Judge Hotchkiss elected, and several other judges in town.
It was important for Ray.
I'm emphasizing it because in the 71 strike, motor wheel, in the 73 strike, motor wheel collected court for exemptive relief.
Is the 73 or 71?
71. In 71, the foundry went on strike after motor wheel went back to work.
Centrifuge?
Centrifuge, yeah.
Which was a separate contract, but part of 182.
Yeah.
He had two contracts.
Yeah, it was one of those bargaining units, a multiple, we called it a...
You didn't call it an amalgamated?
Amalgamated local.
Okay.
Had many units within it. With different contracts, different employers. They went on strike, and when they went on strike, they shut down motor wheel by picketing the motor wheel plant. And motor wheel in that year went to court to get an injunction.
Was Centrifuge a separate employer, you say?
Centrifuge in the very beginning was, but at that time was owned by Goodyear as well.
Okay.
As Motor Wheel. Motor Wheel and Goodyear, one and the same. And wound up in front of Sam Street Hughes, Judge Sam Street Hughes. They wanted an injunction, and I remember that Sam Street Hughes telling them that he would grant an injunction, and how did it sound that if he would assign a dozen pickets to each gate? Well, the foundry didn't have enough pickets, enough members to picket motor wheel or anybody else with a dozen members at each gate. So that was, you know, and Sam Street Hughes knew that we were very active in politics. We never had a chance to support him, but we would have.
Wait, what did his injunction say?
He said to Motor Wheel that he would grant the injunction, and what was their impression?
If and only if he had more than?
No, he would grant the injunction, but he would only restrict it to 12 members, 12 picketers per gate.
So the injunction's only in effect if there are 12 or more people at a gate?
We couldn't have more than that.
What?
We couldn't have more than that.
Right, you could have 11 or 10.
Yeah, but couldn't have more than that. Well.
But that's no issue because you didn't have that.
Well, that wasn't
either
an issue because they didn't have that many members to cover all the gates anyways. And so Motor Wheel got up and walked out in frustration. And when they walked out, I sat at one of the tables. Judge Hughes came forward and shook my hand and took me back into his chambers. Talking with them. That was their first experience with the politics of Local 182.
Okay.
Motor wheel. And 74 was even more extreme because we had supported a judge by the name of Hoskins. I don't know if you were around when he was here.
I knew it was 74.
Well, he left. He left. He left the office. Sad to say, he got mixed up in a divorce, and he had done some things that he shouldn't have done. And, documents and stuff like the driver's license. He had duplicate driver licenses and stuff. And, it was all personal, but he got caught, and there was a big firestorm in the community about that. But that was like 78, 79, somewhere in there. And he ran, and we supported him. He wouldn't let it back down. But he was defeated. But nevertheless, in 74, Motor Wheel, we went on strike. Motor Wheel tried to get the injunction, and it wound up in front of Judge Hoskins, and they were trying to get some things done. I believe it was on. There's another situation that just dropped the line. Any of that, what they were trying to get done with hospice, this is just to make the point of, mm-hmm. Being political.
Mm-hmm.
While the company was trying to find the judge, he was having coffee with us before we went into court. So
we learned a lesson.
We learned that, you know, politics do pay off. We paid off with Bob Carr. When we get double Bob Carr, which check comes out. I believe Bob was on the Armed Services Committee. The motor wheel was taking tank wheels. We lost the contract to Israel. Couldn't figure that out. We lost it. We were working in concert with Motor Wheel at the time. Couldn't figure it out. We lost it on a $1 for tank wheels and lost 90 jobs. The amount of tank wheels that we built, $1 per tank wheel wouldn't have paid the taxes. They lost that tax support from the 90 employees losing their jobs. Well, he just got us information. I mean, he didn't get stopped, didn't get turned around, but whoever made the decision start thinking about it a little more.
But it's still long.
Yeah. It just showed the political arm and just showing the political strength that 182 had. It did very well. I remember people calling the local union saying, we want to run this person for this position. Is it okay? Before they would run anybody, they would ask us on the Democratic side. So,
and is this for the Republicans in 3 years to play the
game? Well, I think we're crazy Republicans. But I'm sure, that's a nonpartisan position. No.
I'm just kidding.
No. I don't believe we did. In a roundabout way, we did. We got mad at Earl Nelson on his votes for on his votes on small loans. The state senator, we got mad at him. Of course, I was president of the council at the time too. But, we decided. No. One of the staff members, and we decided that we weren't going to support Earl Nelson for Senate in the primary, and we did not, and Earl Nelson did not get to the primary. Larry Holland, the infamous, Larry Holland. Poor as being a bad attorney, but poor as being poor.
Okay. Not a lot of money.
Yeah.
He wasn't on the side.
Yeah.
So he's mayor today.
Yeah.
Okay.
He never won an election. Well, never won an election. Other than the primary against Bill Nelson.
And how did you get on the
he was appointed there. He was appointed as a trustee. I'm not sure. Any election that Larry Owen was in other than that primary, and I made that point. I made that point as an AFL-CIO executive board member. I don't recall this guy winning any elections. Why are we supporting him?
Before we pass, I'm going to say maybe we could stop this talking about the
Wouldn't do that.
Anything else? My first interaction with you was in terms of university labor education.
Yes, I got started. When I was Lucky Stewart, I went out there and I got into late studies. Bob Lucas, last LaRue, Morty Winograd was one of the instructors out there. I completed all but one class out there, and that was in the whole thing. Subsequently, he was a good friend with the school, and finally received my certificate of achievement or whatever, whatever it was. Said, well, that's an unfair labor practice. Or this is that, or whatever. You know. Well, let's go see that person. I want to know specifically what the unfair labor practice is. You know, I remember that off the bat. I had a job, this is that, but that's a good job. I had a job. I had a good boyfriend, or husband, or whatever, the school here in town. Like everybody else was, you know. And she, worked in Abel's business. She was going to the school. She was an actress. She came to the school and made a lot of money. One of the stuff we told her was not to make it a month later. Violating and how they're violating. Another good thing.